You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
And as promised, we're in conversation this hour with Minister of Higher Education, Naledi Pandor. And you can take part in this conversation. You can either call in and engage the minister on the issues that we will be unraveling over the next 53 minutes or so. And if you want to do that, you can call us in the Cape Town area on 021-446-0567. And of course, here in Johannesburg on our number 011-883-0702. Feel free also to tweet us your thoughts, your comments, as you hear the minister speak to some of the challenges in the higher education sector. And the hashtag that I'll be looking out for to pick up patterns of the most important comments and questions you want me to engage her on, you can use the hashtag Naledi on Eusebius. She is in our Cape Talk studios this morning. Minister, thank you so much for making time for us and agreeing to this conversation.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and good morning, Eusebius. Morning to your listeners as well.
Firstly, Minister, congratulations. I noted, in fact, a while back that you're being inaugurated as an honorary visiting professor of astronomy and development at Leiden University in the Netherlands. You must be particularly honored and chuffed.
Oh, definitely very, very honored. I must say, I got a bit of a surprise a minute ago when you said Minister of Higher Education. Because, you know, still getting used to it. But yes, it was indeed a fantastic honor, both for my former department, for the work that South Africa has done in astronomy, and also, I think, an acknowledgement of the contribution South African scientists have made to the development of science on the African continent. Because the evolution of this concept, astronomy for development, is a very unusual one.
Yes.
And is something that has been coined out of the South African contribution to the science.
And I'm going to come back to that a little bit later, because there are threads to be pulled between the ministry you've just left and, in fact, some of the focal points in higher education as well. But I want to start really with a sort of big picture question to you. And I was thinking about this last night and again this morning, Minister, and I was wondering whether you would agree, and if so, how you would account for what appears to be unprecedented levels of pressure that are being brought to bear on the higher education sector. Obviously, higher education in all societies have always mattered, must matter. But at this point in our history in particular, one would almost say it's difficult to decide whether this ministry is an incredible opportunity for you or whether it's a poison chalice.
I've been wondering whether it is a poison chalice and whether it's the Peter principle is at work, you know, sort of the highest level for incompetence. I think, though, it's a fantastic opportunity because if we as South Africa can harness the wonderful attributes that we do have in the system and make them work for South Africa and the African continent, we'll be making a very significant contribution to development. There are, as you say, significant pressures. The architecture is still rather too small for the population that we have, and the grand ambitions that are outlined in our national development plan and other strategies. So clearly we've got to think how we make best use of the system, as well as how we steer its expansion into the future, because young people do want opportunity. Our young population is a significant proportion of the population of South Africa, and we cannot limit the system to you know, the small set of institutions and then curb or hamper the ambition and, you know, interest that young people have in developing high-level skills. But of course, what we also need to achieve, and I'll stop in a moment, is to get diversity, because the notion that I should aspire only to a university degree is a wrong one. Opportunity doesn't lie just there. We've got to get the TVET college sector properly funded, properly supported, and of a caliber that will produce the technical and vocational skills that our country needs. Because we have to upend this pyramid.
You hardly need to end there, Minister, because that segues nicely into the first question I have for you. We're going to talk about access and about costing in a minute, but I was wondering in relation to the pressure on this particular portfolio that you now have, precisely to pick up on your last point. I mean, I loved every minute of my university experience. It was transformative. But what does it say about the rest of society, both the state of the state, but society at large as well, that the average Joe sees particularly university education, not just TVET, but university in particular, as a meal ticket, as the only way in which you might set up the opportunities to fulfill your human potential and to live a flourishing life later on? And it's unsurprising when we look at, for example, data including the levels of unemployment with graduates that is significantly higher than unemployment in the general population. But how much of an indictment on the rest of the state, the private sector and society in general is it that so many of us should be clamoring for an opportunity to get an undergraduate degree because we see it as the sole route towards fulfilling our human potential?
Before I answer that, could I just correct the statement you've made about graduate unemployment, because graduate unemployment is lower than employment of the general population. But there is an increasing statistic which we need to be worried about. However, at the moment, persons with university education tend to be the ones who find employment in comparison to other levels of education, and in fact to those who are unskilled. So I just wanted to correct that. But there is an emerging problem which we need to be, you know, realistic about and alert to. So to come to the core question you've posed, I think we have not succeeded as yet. I believe we will, because there's some things we have up our sleeve, but we've not succeeded in convincing the South African population that actually the route to critical skills and to entrepreneurship and employment opportunity is the technical and vocational education sector. And we need to do that. You know, out of our history, that as black people, if you were number one at school, you wanted to become a doctor. If you were number two, you wanted to be a lawyer. If you're number three, maybe a teacher, number four, probably a priest, and so on. So what we've got to do is begin to say, listen, the technical and vocational space is open for everybody. Because, you know, we had all that apartheid law, which blocked access to apprenticeship, to artisanal skills, and so on. So the mindset, I think, of particularly the majority of our population was geared toward university education. And we need to change that.
Let's talk about the cost. I mean, over time, there has been below inflation levels of money going into the higher education sectors. Many vice chancellors in particular are incredibly unhappy about this. And at the same time, former President Jacob Zuma dropped that announcement on the eve of NASREC last year that in fact we want to effectively have free higher education, and we'll unpack that in a second. Do you think that former President Jacob Zuma made a mistake when he made that announcement?
No, because the announcement had been, you know, rather emerged from deliberations that we'd been having following the Her Commission report and recommendations. So those had been looked at by an interministerial committee of which I was a part. We'd looked at the figures and so on. The timing of the announcement was probably what was a surprise, but as to its content, we had gone into the issues in some detail.
But the modalities of it now has been something that will be left up to the economic cluster and to you as the new minister. And of course, former President Jacob Zuma is now not on the political scene. So he doesn't have to deal with that announcement and the timeline for when it is meant to be enacted. How do you see this playing out so that we respond to the incredible pressures on the fiscus from across society. The most indigent probably care about early childhood development, more investment there. We still have schools in provinces like the Eastern Cape that are made of mud structures that are completely undignified, pit latrines in places like Limpopo and elsewhere. So lower down the education value chain, we need more investment as well. And yet at the same time, you know, both for right reasons, but also for political expediency reasons, the ANC cannot afford to ignore the cries of young people wanting to go to university. How do we square the circle, given that there isn't a bottomless pit of money?
Well, one of the things I think our society needs to absorb is the fact that the desires that we have are paid for from public revenue, and therefore that we need to look at how we prioritize. I don't agree that funding has been taken away from early childhood development or the provision of infrastructure within the basic education sector. In fact, we've been very, very consistent in saying that we have to continue to have investment in school infrastructure, and the remaining dangerous facilities at school level must be addressed. This is part of the imperatives that we've talked about and agreed upon in the government Lekgotla. So we're working assiduously to address the issue of school infrastructure and getting rid of the remaining inadequate infrastructure, particularly in the Eastern Cape province and the few pockets that remain in the KZN province.
Minister, if I can just redirect there quickly. I was being too wordy, and that's because you're a very likable politician. Let me ask the question boldly then. Mm-hmm. Can society afford this?
Well, society wanted this. That was my understanding. I wasn't sure that there was an option, because I don't recall in the course of the Fees Must Fall, including your own commentary, which I read in many newspaper excellent articles that you write, there was no one who was against the argument by students for support for them for higher education.
Okay. Before we take our first break, Minister, I want to talk specifically about the 350,000 rand threshold in terms of joint household income. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken in preparation for this conversation to some university administrators, one or two vice chancellors. Obviously, it's difficult for many of them to, you know, just voice some of their concerns. If you take institutions such as UCT and WITS, for example, you will find that potentially up to 70% of the student populations there may not be eligible. And yet those were some of the campuses that have been at the forefront of the decoloniality movement. So how do you see this playing out? Because it might be that many, many families and many students that feel strongly about the state's duty to subsidize education to the point of society paying for it and hopefully getting returns on that investment in the medium to the long term may not be eligible in terms of where we have pegged this 350,000 threshold.
Well, you would know from my own comments as chair formerly of the NEC Committee on Education, Health, Science and Technology that I've always held the view that those of us who can pay must make a contribution. And those who cannot afford must be supported by the state. And I hold to that position, because I think we have a responsibility to those who are most vulnerable and marginalized to ensure that they're properly supported. But if we're able to afford, then we should, as families, make a contribution. And I think the fact that the state has set that threshold of 350,000, many families that struggled in terms of what we were told would now be assisted by the state. But I firmly believe if we can afford, we should pay. And you would know that when you contrast school level fees for schools that are fee paying and contrast that with university level fees, many of us as parents would be paying less than we were paying at school level.
That is certainly true. 20 minutes after 10, we're in conversation with Minister of Higher Education, Naledi Pandor. Some really interesting tweets coming through from you as you're listening to this conversation. I will read some of those on the other side of our first commercial break. If you'd also like to engage the Minister directly on issues that you think are of importance to you, I know that many students listen to this program. Also, many academics do. What are the issues foremost on your mind that you think should be brought to the attention of the Minister? She's all ears as she's getting back into the education sector if you're front and center with this new portfolio. So call in to engage her, but also to offer some of your advice to the extent that all of us as a society have an interest in what happens in the higher education sector. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, on 021-446-0567. In the unlikely event that you're a little bit shy, just tweet us, Naledi on Eusebius, and I will read out some of your tweets in a little while.
Eusebius Makaiser on your number one news and talk station.
I thought you and I were talking to our salt minister, but the phone lines are going off the hook. People want to engage you. Let's take our first round of questions. Josephine, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Congratulations, firstly, to the minister.
Thank you very much.
Minister, we're an organization called Save UniZulu. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I definitely want to make a plea to you. We're pleading with you to do a full independent investigation at the University of Zululand. Minister, we're really pleading with you and sending out this really sincere plea to say come to the ground and see what firsthand how corruption and how the ministry's inaction has caused the suffering of our people.
Let me say, I've heard you because it's not the first such appeal. So I am considering what has been communicated to me.
We really appreciate that.
Thank you, Josephine.
And I think in light of the free higher education, if one organization is allowed to loot, the other organizations or institutions are going to have to pay for it.
Okay, thank you, Josephine, for that one. Minister, I'm going to take a cluster of these. I'm also writing them down, so we'll come back to two or three of them. Next, I'm going to take Heather. Heather, good morning to you. Have you got a comment or a question for the minister?
Good morning, Yusuf. Good morning, Minister. It's a privilege speaking to you. I have a concern. I have grandchildren, and I wrote matric in 1983, and there were certain standards that had to be adhered to before you could even be considered going to a university or to, you know, further education. What concerns me is we keep dropping the standards for pass rates in the schools. What kind of students are we going to put through to university? Do they still have certain criteria that they have to meet? I'm concerned long-term for our country. What quality student, what quality worker are we going to put out there? If you have a student that is expected to pass and he hasn't bothered to hand in his assignments on time, he didn't study for his exams, and yet at the end of the year, the university tell the lecturer, listen, you have to adjust these guys' marks, pass them. How can we say that student is really equipped to go out into the workforce and make a difference in the economy?
Okay, we're going to leave it there, Heather. I've got the question noted. David, what is your question?
Yes, good morning. Yes, my question is, all the technical colleges in Limpopo, right here in Gauteng, Northwest, mostly all of them, there is no refrigeration course. We have electrical, electronics, but refrigeration, you look at it. Every shopping mall, every area, we have bottle stores, we have got the butchers and so forth. It's commercial refrigeration, cold rooms and freezer rooms. But our fellow people, they cannot accept that. It's only in Centurion, in Gauteng. That's the only technical college, which is basically a military college. We don't have refrigeration courses in our technical college. Why?
Okay, we'll speak on that issue as well. Prof. Willie, University of Ford here.
Hi, Eusebius. Thank you for having the minister. I think I wrote a list of questions for you. You can forward the rest. But I just wanted to congratulate the minister, obviously. But obviously, I want to talk about the importance of industry attachment, because I find that sometimes when our students finish their qualifications, most of them don't even have experience whatsoever to show on their CV. Shouldn't the DHET and through the minister introduce some form of compulsory industry attachment that can be affiliated to each and every student as a requisite of getting their formal qualification? And I'm not to hop the line, the other is just to share a little experience how Minister Naledi Pandor came over to our institution a few months ago and gracefully handled a situation that had the potential to become violent and aggressive. And I hope that's the tactic that you're going to use going forth in a very militant and tumultuous environment our higher education system is going through.
Thank you, Professor. You can hog the line any day. He's been a loyal listener of this show. I remember when Professor Ginia Murindi was still a doctoral student in the UK. I just started out my radio career, and then he came back from Zim and is here in South Africa now, and an absolutely brilliant career academic and teacher and supervisor at Fordair. I love your work, Willie. Thanks so much for calling in. Minister, we're going to take a news headlines break. It will give you a chance to catch your breath. Then we're going to talk about Heather's concerns about the quality of students coming into the system. We'll talk about infrastructure at TVET levels. That was David's concern. And then Professor Willie's concern in relation to job readiness of graduates. For the moment, it's 10:30.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, let's get straight into it. Minister, can you tell my Angie to give us better matriculants for our academics?
I think she's trying her best to do so. I always answer this by saying that if you have a minimum pass mark, it doesn't mean that's what you're saying people should aim toward. And I think there's an error that's committed in our public assessment of the minimum pass mark, because there's a notion that when we say minimum is this, we're saying that's what the population must try to get. No. If the minimum is 30% or 40%, you must aim for 100. That's what you should work at. Aim for the top. And we have to convince our population to want excellence more and more and more.
But that's not the public messaging, though.
No, it is. But the interpretation is what is held in the public mind. And maybe you're right, we need to strengthen our communication. But there's no way that any minister, in considering curriculum review or pass levels, pass levels, would be saying to the nation, I want you to aim for 30%. That's just not possible.
We still have a quality problem, Minister. South African students struggle to finish their undergraduate degrees in regulation time, including the ones that go to private schools and to form.
And
it's a massive, massive problem.
We've got to work on.
Okay, reflect for me a little bit on that, because that suggests that even those students, nowadays, if a student says, and I don't want to have sour grapes, because we always think the summers were hotter when we were kids. But if someone says to me, my child got 6 A's, I'm like, please, I want to have lunch with your child before I decide whether they are ready to be able to do an undergraduate degree in BSc or if they do BA, a really difficult technical subject like, say, academic philosophy. What's going on there? Because even kids that go to private schools and former Model C schools struggle to finish in regulation time.
Well, I really think this is something that you should discuss with deans of various faculties as well as vice chancellors. It's very difficult for me as a minister. I mean, I can say a whole lot, but, you know, as a former lecturer, but really it's not my purview as a minister. Mm. I do think the matter of quality needs to be improved. You know that students have been arguing for what they call decolonization. So, for example, if you're studying philosophy and economic policy, what literature are you reading? You know, which economic frameworks and policy perspectives are you studying? What theoretical framework, what philosophical ideology has been presented to you? You know, is Ubuntu incorporated in the remit of the academic program and curriculum that you're being offered, or is it, Peter's at Oxford or Lewis at Cambridge, you know? So sure. I think familiarity or ability to engage with the academic discourse that you're presented with is another challenge. Added to that, of course, is the fact that you're using a language that you might not be totally, conversant with. You're not able at the academic level to use a language effectively, because there is a distinction between communication in a language and academic use of a language. So I think all those things still require attention. I can't believe I'm saying it, because, you know, we used to say it in the early 90s and we're still saying it today. So it means there's a need. I do think the university just needs to look at this whole issue of what we do in terms of the overall undergraduate degree structure to ensure that we equip undergrads with the discourse, conceptual, and other skills that allow them to be really good academic students. And I'm not sure we're paying full attention to that. And our sticking to the current degree structure, I think, militates against our ability to offer that kind of broader intellectual depth to young people.
It's funny you should say that. I mean, I'm going to set it aside for now. You're right. The deans must be brought in.
We've got to answer some of those questions.
I'm going to bring them in right here. But the Council for Higher Education tried to open up this debate 3-4 years ago. Mm. Should be, for example, a 4-year undergraduate degree programs. And there were all sorts of interesting pros and cons to it. But let's move to David's question. TVETs ideally should not be the stepchild of universities when it comes to this sector. They are, and it seems to be a case of either perception or reality or mix of both, that they are hugely under-resourced and in society not valued if you attend one of them. How do we deal with that strategically? It requires an hour conversation on its own, Minister, but give us some intuitions you have.
Well, certainly it does require much deeper conversation. And please remember, I mean, the first week of this post. but the change that has been announced with respect to the funding of TVET colleges is something that I think is a positive step, because we are going to have a significant contribution to improved infrastructure for the TVET college sector. And we're going to be having, I think, a deeper discussion with them about this whole issue of specialization, because I think we cannot avoid the differentiation debate with respect to the TVET sector. I think an opportunity is before us. You know, I really would love to see TVET colleges whose particular remit is the engineering sectors and others whose remit is the information communication technology sector, and then the financial sector at the highest technical and professional level. So I'm hoping we'll have this conversation, and then you begin to have an attractive set of institutions that offer a high quality program with very strong links with industry, playing both a training role as well as a placement role in partnership with colleges. So I'm committed to really seeking to dynamize this sector, working in partnership with it to kind of set a new agenda for it. And I think we have the time now and we should do it.
You've answered,
but of course, I only have 15 months.
You answered Willie a little bit, but I'll just give you a 1 minute just to comment on that, then we must take a break, which is this question of how the higher education sector interfaces with the world of work. I can't tell you, Minister, over the last 5-7 years, how many fora I have had, both the pleasure but also the challenge of moderating, where we bring in industry, we bring in the VCs and philanthropists, and there's always and business, and there's always a bun fight. Business says to the higher education sector, why can't you CBS already work the information systems by the time he is working for me at RMB? And you've got the VC saying, listen, you guys missed the point of a university in society. We're not a finishing school. You must accept that you're going to have to upskill this guy. All we can give you is someone who is analytically sharp, has got some agility and some basic numeracy. And beyond that, you must make sure that they learn on the job. Where do you see that debate?
Well, I wonder if they're even providing that analytical sharpness. I do think there's a question there. However, my view is universities cannot neglect the world outside them. This argument was had many, many decades ago. Mm. We don't have ivory towers any longer. We have young people whose lives we should have an interest in. And so the issue of absorption, while not the core business of the institution, should be of concern. If I'm a vice chancellor, surely I must be concerned about knowing whether my products are regarded as of no use to industry, all are attractive. And I would begin to look at why would it be the case either way. So I don't think a university leadership worth its salt would neglect this issue of what happens to its graduates.
Okay, let's take a break there. Eunice, Richard and Carmel, we're going to take your questions. Obviously, it's early days for the minister. We'll have her back in future as well. Way too many issues that we need to thresh out. The decoloniality topic itself, curricular changes, all of those issues. But we'll see how much we can get through in the 20 minutes remaining.
Eusebius Mackayser on your number one news and talk station.
16 minutes before 11, we're in conversation with Minister of Higher Education, Naledi Pandor. Use the hashtag Naledi on Eusebius, and we'll pick up some of your comments there. We are running out of time. I'm going to ask you to please keep your questions straight to the point. Eunice, good morning to you.
Yeah, hi there, Eusebius. Eusebius, my question is, I'm all for free education, but having read last week's Sunday Times, where a college in Pretoria, you know, where students were allocated 15 million rand for three functions, student functions, at taxpayers' expense. Here you had the vice principal who had racked up a cell phone bill of 450,000 rand a year. Minister, really, with tears in my eyes, is that what free education is all about? I'd like your comments and what action you're going to take regarding this.
Okay, thank you, Eunice. Richard, welcome to the conversation.
Hello.
Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you to the minister. I'm from Teach South Africa. I'm an NGO that recruits graduates from universities to teach mathematics, science, English, and IT in rural schools and township schools. We're battling with funding to do this work, and it's a great beneficial work for job creation, for young people, and really improving the economy and ensure that we create a pipeline for our young people to do well in mathematics and science. We're pleading that if there's any other willing funder out there, should come in and assist, because we know the work that this graduate.
Okay, Richard, let's do this. I'm going to put you back. That's not what you said to my producers you would ask, but that is critically important work. TeachSA is important. We'll give you another opportunity on the show, and you can talk to us fully about what you have been doing, and I give you my assurance we will do so. Kama, good morning. Do you have a question for the minister?
Morning. Am I on?
Yes, go ahead. What's your question?
I just wanted to ask, when are they discontinuing diplomas, especially in the applied science and engineering faculty, in technological universities? It's 2018 and people are still having the conversations. What is the national diploma equivalent to? And a lot of these companies don't regard in service as being actual training. They disregard it. But the reality of the situation is a lot of students that come from technological universities are not getting opportunities to get what we call graduate development training programs, which is what is going to actually propel your career into the right setting moving forward. Because personally, I've seen this time and time again. Students with diplomas are just not being facilitated as per students who have BSc's and your BNG's and your BCom's and so forth.
Okay, great question there, Kamu. A complicated one. Let's pick up on the last one first, Minister. The question of diplomas. We live in a society where being certificated can often make the difference between even getting into a company for an opportunity at an interview, let alone getting the actual job or not. How do you respond to karma? Obviously, we've got to deal with that and subvert that tendency.
Well, I think one of the areas that we have really over two decades not addressed properly is this whole issue of what's called articulation and mobility. So a seamless transition from one set of institutions and a qualification into another. So from your universities of technology, let's say into your university or graduate program, it's something we're quite bad at. We have such a breach between programs and institutions that the notion of a set of programs that are interrelated and integrated is absent, whereas many societies have actually addressed this in the modern age. So it is an area that we are looking at, because we have to have this seamless transition. We must offer young people opportunity to improve, to enhance their qualifications in other institutions. So I should be able to move from a TVET college with credited programs into a university program and so on. It's something South Africa has to work at and learn to do. So I'm hoping in my deliberations, certainly with the HEC, with the CHE, as well as with SAQA, that we will be talking about how we achieve this. Because it's been a cry for many, many years. And I think Kam is making a very good point. With respect to Teach South Africa, I think that as far as I'm aware, the Department of Basic Education has some collaboration with them. So perhaps when you invite them, it might be a good idea to also have basic education.
I will do so.
Finally, on the Tshwane South, which is, I think, the institution Eunice was referring to, there is an investigation underway, and we hope to get to the bottom of the problem. I do think it's very wrong that institutions are giving such allegedly large sums of money to funding bashers or whatever these things are called. And so I think there should be a proper investigation. And with respect to that cell phone account, if that is true, it sounds to me as though it's absolutely not right and is something that should be a matter for a serious disciplinary action. But let's let the investigations be done, and we will act upon the reports that we get. Could I just deal with the other questions that had been posed by some people that we haven't addressed?
Yeah, let's just take a break here. I'm told I want you for the next 2 hours. I'm told we need to take a break. We've got 10 minutes left. I'll give you a chance to respond to the others on the other side of this, Minister.
Okay.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, we are going to run out of time, Minister. Let's see whether we can deal with some of the other issues that we had not yet got to, one or two that you wanted to respond to.
Well, I just wanted to say to Heather that she should encourage her grandchildren to try and really do their best at school in order to be admitted to university. I think we have some excellent universities, seven of which are actually global in terms of reputation. And the rest are really beginning, I think, to up their game, and we'll support them to up it even further. We have admission criteria at universities that I think are quite good criteria, which recognize quality passes, and we would maintain that as a system. I also am considering the UniZulu matter. And hopefully we'll, when we next meet, be able to talk about what we're trying to do there. So I just thought those two we hadn't really touched, and I should respond to them. And industry attachments, I have a very nice lunch tomorrow with industry organizations to launch a partnership with them, where we will be focusing upon the training of young people, in particular technical and professional sectors, and then also agreeing that they will absorb the numbers that we train. It's quite an exciting program, and we'll be launching it on Friday morning. So I'm quite thrilled about
it. In the 2 minutes left, Minister, let's just reflect on one of the other big issues that universities are debating about, their place in society and whether or not their role should evolve in certain ways. Some universities are very keen to be research intensive and to compete with similar kind of examples in the rest of the global south, including countries who are geographically in the north, like Russia and China. And WITS is one of them, for example, focusing on postgraduate, UCT to some extent as well. I mean, obviously, if we had a magic wand, we would take undergraduate teaching seriously and still have incredible research output, but you can't always have your cake and eat it. Where do you see this debate? What are some of the initial thoughts? I know it's early days, but I know many of the universities are desperate, because when we talk access, at some point, the debate about access and getting thousands of people through the undergraduate system will clash with the strategic repositioning, say, for example, if WITS wanted to focus intensely on research.
I think no country should neglect its research capacity, because increasingly the world is a knowledge-based world, and where we have strength in research, we need to hone that and continue to invest in it. So I'm very committed to ensuring that we even increase our global reach in terms of research outcomes and innovation performance. With respect to teaching excellence is critical. And I don't think the differentiation debate must be defined as it is in South Africa sometimes as an debate about equity. It's a debate about where we best place our resources and how we strengthen our institutions to produce the best that they can. I don't think an institution that offers excellent teaching can neglect to do excellent research. But I do think there are universities that have the capacity for world-class research, and that should be supported.
Two quick bonus ones with my tongue only half in my cheek. How cool would it be after the 2019 elections if science and technology was collapsed so that it is actually part of higher education and you were in charge of both?
Well, I noticed that presidents these days are very receptive to suggestions as to how they should do their job. So I suggest that you send in that suggestion.
And then the last one, Minister, I know you've been very busy. I was just wondering, have you had a chance yet to send at least an SMS to Minister Malusi Kigaba to tell him that you wish him to get well very quickly? Apparently he's ill.
No, I haven't, unfortunately. I tend to be really quite busy. This portfolio is huge, and I'm trying to grapple with what I need to do. So I've been reading, getting reports this morning on the various institutions where I see that there are little, you know, pockets of trouble, and I'm trying to ensure that we address that. So I tend to sort of focus on my job.
Absolutely. No time to engage colleagues suffering from listeriosis. Minister, thank you so much for coming in.
No, I don't think that's a fair comment. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. Bye-bye.